Hello and welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast, our weekly look at all things exciting about California politics. We hope exciting, sometimes exciting, never exciting.
Don't look
at me. There
was
no reaction from you whatsoever when I said that.
Well, when you say something incorrect, I'll correct you.
Fair enough. I'm John Myers from KQED, and that is Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, here to chit-chat about what's been going on this week as we sit here at the beginning of another exciting week at the state capitol in Sacramento. So let's just jump right in. Anthony has been following an interesting story over the last, couple of weeks or so?
A few weeks.
On a particular part of what's going on with healthcare, some would say the healthcare crisis, in particular, people who essentially lost their coverage, right?
Who had their coverage canceled. These are sick people who had their coverage canceled or rescinded, which I guess is the technical term, by health plans after they'd made claims for coverage or of their illness. Department of Managed Health Care, which regulates HMOs, found that that some of these plans have illegally rescinded thousands of people, potentially thousands of people, and they took the first step this week in reinstating about 26 in all. 26 patients who had had their health coverage canceled were given their coverage back last week.
And, I mean, what is there a broader message that can be taken from that, do you think? I mean, is it...
That the administration responds well to pressure, I think, is the broader message. But, you know, this has been a hot political issue. You know, since 2004, there are an estimated 4,000 or 5,000 instances of rescission. Nobody knows the exact number.
Right.
But the administration has come under a lot of pressure from consumer groups and advocates to reinstate health care for these people. And, you know, I think there have been some stories in the Capitol Weekly and elsewhere, other small regional papers. There's a little one in Los Angeles. I can't remember the name of it.
Small newspaper in Los Angeles.
It's a small regional daily. Yes.
tweaks the LA Times.
Well, they're all busy working, so they don't listen.
But now, didn't you tell me that you had a little news to break?
I don't know if it's news. I don't know that it's news. Anybody who knows how a health plan operates. But, you know, these reinstatements are going to be challenged in the courts by the health plans. Certainly, it's not just the 26 that they're worried about. There are thousands of cases now that are all going to be subject to review from the Department of Managed Care. And the health plans are worried that they're going to have to reinstate coverage to these people and pay retroactively. And we're talking about millions and millions of dollars worth of health care coverage.
Because that would essentially be, am I right, would essentially be like if you reinstate this one, why not this one, why not this one? In other words, some kind of precedent-setting action?
Yeah, and not only that, I think what they're really concerned about is opening the door to civil cases. If these people have been found, you know, they found that they had their coverage canceled illegally or wrongly, that it opens the door for big-time lawsuits against these health plans beyond just the fines that the department's going to impose.
You know, there was a lot of talk during the health care negotiations last year. It seems there was a lot of criticism from one side of the aisle and one group of players that the Schwarzenegger administration was too close to the health care industry and, you know, maybe was I don't know, you know, doing things in a way that maybe, you know, more of what the healthcare industry would want, the insurance companies would want, for example. This certainly doesn't seem to hold water when you come at something like this, right?
Well, and I think that some of the more aggressive advocates would say this is a small, only 26 people were reinstated, and they might say this is a CYA move, a cover your butt. Butt starts with A, right?
Right.
A cover your butt move by the administration. I think a lot of the advocates, those same advocates, appeared at the press conference with Cindy Enos, the director of the department and of managed healthcare, and the advocates, people like Sheila Kuehl, who have been very critical of the department, applauded the department for their actions last week.
And Kuehl, of course, a Democrat from Santa Monica, who's on her last few months in the legislature, being termed out of the state Senate. But I was going to say, I mean, this plays exactly to what Kuehl has talked about for years as the champion of a single-payer health care system where you effectively would route around insurance companies.
Right. And the health plans say, hey, look, if this health care bill that was the Fabian Nunez bill that was sponsored by the governor or supported by the governor. If that had passed, it would have taken away the rescission issue because it would have that health care plan would have demanded that everybody have health insurance and would have eliminated an insurer's ability to reject an applicant. So
then in some way, does it further highlight the failure of last year's health care plan?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the fact that we're still talking about rescissions going forward, I mean, it really is illustrative of the larger story is that, you know, the omnibus health care bill tried to address a number of issues at once that have been longstanding fights in the health care world. And now those fights are going on again. Now the deal has fallen apart.
Hmm. Well, as we transition out of policy to pure politics for a moment.
That was a deep, deep sigh.
That was. Yeah. I didn't know how. I was looking for like a verbal transition. And since last week, I was totally like a slam for not having any good transitions. I just wasn't even going to try this time.
I didn't mean to totally like slam you, as you so eloquently put it.
I was hurt. I was so hurt. Let's just talk about something that's just regular old politics for a moment, because we have talked the last couple of weeks a little bit about the ever intensifying campaign to recall a sitting state senator in the Central Valley, a Republican that Democrats have been pushing forward. They got it on the ballot. We're talking about Jeff Denham, state senator from Stanislaus County. And as we know, it's going to be on the ballot in June, et cetera, et cetera. That's the whole background if you've missed the last few podcasts. And if you have missed the last few podcasts, I mean, why? I mean, come on.
I don't know.
Anyway. So if you didn't get all that, including our little snippet of one of the political ads against Denham last week that we played, a new chapter in this saga from this week, and one that clearly brings some negative light to the leader of the Democrats in the state Senate, Don Parada of Oakland, the outgoing Senate president pro tem. And you actually, Mr. York, broke this story last week, Thursday or Friday, end of last week?
Yes, it was It was Friday.
So what happened? Friday. What happened?
What happened was you had some angry staff who what happened was Senator Parada called an off-campus meeting that was supposed to be attended by all of the Democratic Senate chiefs of staff.
Off-campus means away from the
Capitol?
Away
from the Capitol, where politics is allowed to happen because we don't want politics happening in the Capitol.
Never happens there.
So at this meeting was supposed to be an assembling of names and addresses for people who were available to walk precincts in June.
Staffers, you mean?
Yes, staffers. It's commonplace for staffers to vacation in places like lovely Hanford, California, and in this instance, Merced, and San Francisco, where there's another competitive race. But mm-hmm. staffers are often offered up, pimped out by their bosses.
There's the hot button
made
issue
available.
Term.
Don't tell Chelsea Clinton I said so. But the Chelsea. Anyway, I digress.
Please.
And not in a good way.
It's a podcast.
Yes, family podcast. But staffers are often the foot soldiers in walking precincts in contested races. Clearly, the defense of Carol Migdon's seat in the Democratic primary against Mark Leno and Joe Nation is one top priority for the Senate, and the other is the recall of Jeff Denham. So Senator Parada sent letters. There were some chiefs of staff who had other things to do that night, apparently, didn't attend this meeting, and they received curt, tersely worded. Well, how did I put it in the story?
Well, let's just put you got it. You got a hold of the letter. I take
we got a hold of the letter. It was a letter from Don Parada to some of his fellow senators.
And reading from Capitol Weekly, Anthony writes, the letter said, "Dear Senator, your chief of staff was a no-show at yesterday's off-campus meeting. The campaign staff reviewed the demand list of services needed between now and June 3rd, which is Election Day. Please ask your chief of staff to contact," name of a Parada staffer, it's really not as important, "this is not an optional activity. Thank you," unquote. And that last sentence is the hot button sentence, is it not?
I think it's really the tone of the letter, and I think that's what got the visceral. I mean, I had this leaked to me simultaneously by 10 different people. You know, it was. I think a lot of senators received this letter and they were not happy about it, and they were not happy about the tone of the letter. You know, every elected senator is elected and represents his own constituents, doesn't like being told what to do.
But the final sentence, I mean, has as much to do with the tone as anything. This is not an optional activity.
Yeah.
You do not have a choice to participate in these events.
Right. And I think it does speak to, I don't know, I don't know how would you gauge the level of enthusiasm for the denim recall in the Senate Democratic caucus?
I don't know. I mean, the problem with the whole denim recall is that, and with all due respect to the folks who say he should be recalled, it very much feels like a fight that was fought a long time ago. It feels like yesterday's story in terms of the grounds for the recall, right? I mean, we all went through this about denim and whether he voted for it or wouldn't vote and all the anger about it. It seems last summer. So I guess as a Capitol reporter, it's almost exhausting to kind of have to, you know, dig back up the whole budget from last year.
Right. We may get a chance again this year.
Well, yeah. But I mean, so I guess in that sense, I don't know. It feels like yesterday's news in some places and corridors that I sit and chat about it over coffee. I mean, what?
Oh, and I just don't get the sense, and you know, please interject if you're picking up something different, but I don't get the sense among the senators that I've talked to and clearly among the staff that I've talked to, there's no great enthusiasm for this race. I just don't feel it. And maybe that's because they don't want to have to go to Merced. I don't know, you know. But I don't get the sense that most people feel this is the place where the caucus should be spending its resources. Now, there is a pervasive sense of, oh, hey, why not? Let's give it a shot. You know, I think they've got nothing to lose, as we've discussed before about this. But this is Don Parada's fight, I think. And it's a fight that he's leading, I think, in spite of and not really with a lot of his colleagues.
Well, the denim campaign certainly picked up on it quickly and you know, expressed their predictable outrage over the letter. And your reporting on this was followed by the Sacramento Bee over the weekend, adding another element to the process behind the process of the recall campaign, which were allegations that a staffer for the state Senate was asked to do effectively campaign work for the Yes Recall Denim campaign.
Right.
Which is a no-no if you're being paid state taxpayer dollars to do this work.
Right.
Because as you alluded to, Anthony, before, people usually take it as a sabbatical, a holiday, a vacation.
Right.
Or something like that. And so there were these allegations. Parada staff quickly said it did not happen. This was not that. And I want to be fair to them. They said that the allegations aren't true in that sense. But it was another element to the story. And again, this brewing kind of, you know, off-camera, shall we call it, kind of thing, of the underground of what's going on with this campaign and the effort and the back and forth over all of this.
But it's an issue in the campaign for this reason. Jeff Denham has made Don Parada an issue in the fight to save his job. His campaign is really premised, the central premise of his campaign is this is a personal fight that Don Parada has with Jeff Denham. Has nothing to do with the way Jeff Denham is representing his constituents. And I think that a kind of attack on Parada has been part and parcel of the Denham campaign. Now, so these stories, I mean, I think that there's always stories about using state resources for political purposes. I mean, it's almost not the point. I mean, it's a great way for Denham's campaign to get out there and, you know, grab headlines for a couple of days, make
but
an issue.
But also to try to hammer home what you're talking about.
Right, absolutely.
A two-person race.
Right.
In other words, it's not a race between two sides of Jeff Denham for them. Their strategy is it's a race between Jeff Denham and Don Parada.
Right. And in the Central Valley, I like Jeff Denham's chances. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would imagine that there will be an FPPC complaint to follow. I mean, this is, if Parada's guilty of anything, it's probably just political clumsiness, not realizing how this would be used against him by his opponents. And I think, you know, I heard the phrase ham-handed in terms of the letter itself and the tone of the letter and the fact that it was delivered to senators' Capitol offices. Now, not on official letterhead. It was on blank paper and was hand-delivered by a staffer who presumably was on their lunch break or something, you know. But it's ammunition for Denham, and I think and also didn't sit well with a lot of Parada's colleagues.
And it's just, you know, I wonder, and I want to be careful in saying that I don't have any basis for this other than just kind of thinking out loud.
Uh-oh.
Always dangerous on a podcast, but I do. But here we go. Nothing big, but I do wonder if, you know, part of what you got when you said you had all these people tell you about it, and, you know, you worked on the piece and you talked to a lot of people for the piece, you know, in this kind of angst or grumpiness or whatever you would characterize it as, doesn't somehow also play as part of the transition of leadership in the Senate. Because, I mean, the one leader who is termed out of the legislature, the one, you know, one termed out legislative leader who is staying the longest is Don Parada.
Right.
Fabian Nunez, the Speaker of the Assembly, is turning over the reins within 10 days or so,
13th.
2 weeks, yeah. Dick Akerman, the Republican leader in the Senate, turned over the reins last week to his successor, Dave Cogdell. Mike Vallance in the Assembly is good because he's still in office. He's not being termed out.
Right.
But you have a longer lame duck transition, for lack of a better term, in the Senate. And I would imagine that's a complicated situation unto itself.
I think that's some of it. I think definitely that's some of it. And, you know, there's a lot of bad news going around. I mean, the budget is worse than
right.
we thought. And I think that there's a lot of grumpiness to go around, and some of it's just, you know, having this little flare up in the middle of a storm of bad political news is, I think it's just, you know, something that a lot of people just didn't want to have to deal with.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't follow every little nuance of politics all the time, I mean, one of the things that that Anthony and I certainly know, and a lot of political reporters know, and political insiders know, is that there are some key people working on the Denham campaign to save Denham's job who have already fought, and they would argue won, a battle against Don Parada this year, which was when they made Don Parada, the leader of the Senate, and Fabian Nunez, the leader of the Assembly, the two poster guys for the No on 93, the term limits modification initiative. They made Nunez and Parada front and center that campaign, that it was a way of extending the careers of these two politicians. And
right.
so I guess part of that is that, you know, well, they've already got a whole way of approaching the leader of the state Senate. And now it's easy, I guess they would argue maybe, or some would argue, to kind of put him in that campaign, right?
Right. Well, I mean, the Denham political team, as you said, is the same political team from Prop 93. And they've already run a personal race against Don Parada. They've already...
Right.
taken a race where in which Parada's name was not on the ballot and made it a referendum partially about him.
So they consider themselves 1-0.
Yeah, the extension of that. I think they're running pretty much the same campaign.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of talk of Jeff Denham that I can see in this race. Parada's team, or the pro-recall forces, are trying to focus it on Denham. And as we played the ad last week, that maybe you can throw a link up on the podcast website or something like that.
I'm sure people will get to hear it again.
Get to hear it again, but yeah, I mean, and that is, I think that's a big part of the debate, and will determine the success of the recall to a large degree, is who's more successful in getting in sort of framing the debate.
So let me pose a question to you, and this will be both a small discussion point and maybe a transition, God forbid, a transition into our third topic of the day. But that is a Capital Insider, who is a very smart person. Yeah, you love that, as opposed to like any dumb Capital Insider, right? There are no dumb people at the Capitol, right?
Not if they're listening.
But a very smart person asked me what I thought the chances were of the governor getting involved to help save Denham in this race. Now, the governor has said he supports Denham.
Right.
The governor has said he's against the recall. I mean, you know, he's put these statements out. But how involved might Governor Schwarzenegger get? Would he go down and campaign for Denham? Would he do more? Would he be a more visible presence in the Save Denham campaign in this district? And the reason it was posed to me was, if the governor gets in a pinch with trying to deal with this budget getting through the legislature, couldn't there be something of saying, hey, I'll come help you save your seat, but you got to help me on the budget? Possible?
Possible. I mean, sure, he could build up a chit with Jeff Denham. Yeah, absolutely. And maybe the governor's learned a lesson from the past. I mean, I know that there were some other senators, I mean, chief among them, Abel Maldonado, who was...
Republican from Santa Maria.
From Santa Maria, who was pretty outspoken about the lack of support from the governor.
Right.
in his run for statewide office.
Or his feeling of a lack of support, however we would define it. Right.
Right. So perhaps the governor has taken some of those lessons to heart and will sort of put his neck out a little bit for Jeff Denham. I don't know what the political calculation is there, how that translates, you know, and whether that translates into a budget vote. I just don't know. I mean,
if nothing else, though, it's an interesting dynamic.
Absolutely.
And it's a possible interesting dynamic, certainly. I mean, because, you know, while the Denham campaign may be very successful at pushing the, you know, it's a Democratic trick thing, it could not hurt to have Arnold Schwarzenegger down there saying, vote for this man, keep him in his job.
Well, and it's perhaps then the carrot and stick approach to try to achieve the same end, right? Don Prado wants to vote for the budget. That's ultimately why the recall is going on. And if maybe he gets that vote in a roundabout way by allowing the governor to step in and quote unquote save Jeff Denham, because Perot, when it comes budget time, I imagine, you know, when it comes time to try to get a deal through the Senate, that the governor and the pro tem are going to be on the same side.
Well, let's talk about the budget. And, yes, all the people who will say we just came up with lots of theories that aren't true here about that particular race, we're just theorizing.
No, they're all true.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to prevent the phone calls that I would get, so maybe I'll just direct them to you.
Fine.
Okay, let's talk about the budget, because trickling of budget news or things to watch kind of trickling in over the next few days. We've talked about last week. It was tax day. Anthony filed an extension. I filed mine on time.
Filed my extension on time?
Yeah, but an extension's just kind of a cop-out, isn't it?
I'm getting a refund.
But it's a cop-out.
It's not a cop-out. Okay. I'm allowing the government to hold on to my money interest-free that much longer. What's the problem?
You are such a noble man.
Aren't I?
So a few things on the budget. We're continuing to have discussions in the legislature reviewing line item by line item, but basically we're sitting here waiting for revenue figures to come in at the end of April. And as I wrote about online last week, and everybody's starting to kind of watch, and people have done this in years past. I mean, you know, reporters have called the Franchise Tax Board and asked how much money was coming in every day. Because let's think about it. It literally is people opening envelopes and pulling out checks and doing the math to see how much money they get every day. So State Controller John Chung, who is the chairman of the Franchise Tax Board, has put up on his website, which I'll put a link if you're just weird enough like me to want to look at it every day, has put up a link on his website this year, a way to track the daily totals of tax revenues coming into the state. Now, the daily totals are off by a few days. Like, for instance, by the time we did this podcast on Monday, it still only had data from last Thursday, so 2 days after tax day on it. But,
well, it was Passover. John Chung was probably busy.
Was he?
Passover. I don't know. He's not Jewish.
I don't know. I'm not either, but I went to a Seder.
Hallie Jordan can call and ask.
This is the Name Dropper podcast now. Any more? Okay.
Ira Gershwin. George Ira.
Right. Rhapsody in Blue. Moving on. Onward. Ooh, wow. Randomness there. Scattershot. So if you look at the tax revenues that have come in so far, you really get a very clear picture of how deep the hole is. And this is not the hole that we already have. This is the fact that the hole will probably be bigger than the about $8 billion-ish that was left after the legislature and the governor took their action in January. And there were already published reports about 10, 12 over the weekend. I think those were lawmakers kind of theorizing as to what the number would be. But
thought I saw 14.
Well, I was going to say, I think a lot of it was a lot of guessing. I mean, nobody really knows yet.
But it is. But it has become kind of like a limbo contest, right? How low can you go? I mean, it's like there are kind of apocalyptic estimates floating out there. And, you know, the revenue, talking to the Department of Finance, the housing market has been obviously decimated. It's kept things down, and nobody's buying anything.
Yeah.
But since you filed your taxes on time, you'll be getting your $600 stimulus check soon, right?
$1,200.
Oh, right. Well, now that you're married, right? Not that you haven't been for 10 years.
Yeah, married. I don't think I get one for the kid yet, but anyway.
No, next year.
So, but I want to talk about this number really quickly, because what's interesting about this is, so Chong has put the numbers up. You can see every day how much income tax revenue is coming in, personal income tax revenue is coming in. For the month to date of April, it's just over $3.3 billion have come in. That brings for the, now bear with me, folks, got a few numbers here, but I think it shows the point. For the year to date, as through last Thursday, fiscal year to date, which we know is July 1 to June 30, for the fiscal year 2008 to date, which would be 07, 08, sorry, but I digress, the total personal income tax revenue the state's taken in is just over $37 billion. The governor's budget projects by the end of April, we will have $45.3 billion in personal income taxes. That is $8 billion more that we would need to have in those envelopes that are opened between now, the time last week, and April 30th.
$8 billion in 2 weeks?
That's $8 billion in 2 weeks.
Only if you're billing at Ashley Dupree levels would you... No?
Elliot
Spitzer?
Oh, sorry.
See, it's already dated.
It's already dated.
It needs some new material.
And it was a date, wasn't it? It was an expensive date.
A rental.
But... that is a different podcast. But I mean, but $8 billion in 2 weeks. I mean, there is really nobody inside state government who thinks that's going to happen. In which case, yeah, we got a much bigger hole than $8 billion and a lot more problems.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like the opposite of, oh, no, never mind. I was going to bring up Notorious B.I.G. Is that another podcast?
No, it's definitely
more money,
podcast.
More problems. But less I will money, get, more problems.
But yeah. I will circle back to someone we talked about a moment ago, Don Parada, the president pro tem of the state Senate, who was out addressing college students from around California today. We're taping this on a Monday. Who were here protesting at the Capitol about the governor's proposed plan for higher education that they say would raise tuition and cut back services, et cetera, et cetera. Parada not only again reiterated his "we need to raise taxes to solve the problem" line, but my favorite quote of his, I'm going to butcher it slightly, but paraphrasing it here, was, and this goes to show about how long we may be here this year waiting for a budget, "if we have to watch the World Series from this building, so what? So be it."
Well, Parada, you know, is a baseball fan.
He is a baseball fan, but, you know, that is, they call it the Fall Classic for a reason. We're supposed to have a budget on July 1st. Be a very long budget season.
Indeed. Well, and I think there'd be a lot of, you know, it's also a convention year, which is, you know, there's a lot of a lot of politicians who love to go on to these national conventions.
What about the ones who are delegates?
Carol Migdon is a delegate, absolutely.
What about the ones who are superdelegates?
Oh, Carol Migdon is a superdelegate.
Yes, but she's not the only one. I mean, I could sit here and go through the list of people who are delegates and superdelegates. Fabian Nunez, the Speaker of the Assembly.
Okay. You don't have to go through the list.
But anyway, my point is, couldn't that be an... Now, see, now we've come up on a topic I didn't even have on my sheet, Anthony. Couldn't that be an interesting dynamic to the race for president, especially in the Democratic Party?
Well, that all depends
about
on
releasing powerful members of the legislature to go to the convention?
So that the presidential nomination will be tied up in the state budget.
Yes,
fight.
Yes.
That'll move things right along.
Do you see how that perfectly fits in every political reporter's life, that you can tie the budget and the convention into one story?
Great.
But, I mean, it could be... you know, why we're sitting here theorizing, it could happen.
Good.
Okay. Not buying that. You're not going to happen.
I don't know.
All right.
You know, I'm not a big grassy knoll guy. No.
Damn. I had a conspiracy all lined up there. Well, I think we should just say
it's the McCain forces that are holding up the state budget. You heard it here first.
All right. Well, I think we should say we'll keep watching the revenue numbers. The revenue numbers will be interesting when they come in at the end of April. Then we'll really see where we are. And then, as we all know, everyone will know, that's when the debate really begins about what are you going to do about the budget? What are you going to do about how to pay for government? Are you going to raise taxes? Are you not going to raise them? Are you going to raise fees? Are you not going to raise them? Are you going to shut down the government while we have a standoff? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows?
Only the shadow knows.
Only the shadow knows. You're full of pop culture references today.
It's an old radio. Never mind.
It's not radio. This is a podcast.
Say goodnight, John.
They're different. Good night, John. All right, that's enough for this edition of the Capital Notes podcast. Thank you. Thank you for your patience. We really
You're
need...
You're welcome. Oh, wait, no, you weren't talking to me.
No. Your patience? Oh, Anthony. All right, folks. We'll see you next time. Thanks.